Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are in your ears thanks to the fabulous OldFootballShirts.com. Well, two defeats in a week have seen us condemned to fifth in the table and out of the Carabao Cup after Saturday's loss to champions Manchester City, and we were knocked out on penalties by the FA Cup holders Leicester City this week. The fixtures don't get any easier as we head to inform Liverpool on Saturday, but we go to Anfield with the muscle memory of winning there last season. Joining me on the show today is, of course, Alan Wes. And we are delighted to welcome a man who played, well, delete as necessary, it's either 331 or 307 times, depending on what publication you're reading. But he played that many times for the Albion, scoring 17 goals. And in making his debut, not only became the youngest ever Albion debutant at the time, but also the first graduate from the FA's School of Excellence. He also went on to be a part of Dean Wilkins' backroom staff before taking charge of Burgess Hill until 2019. I'm sure you all know who it is, but ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Ian Chapman. Hello, Ian. Can you please confirm, is it 331 or 307 times you played for the Albion?
331.
331. Good.
So yeah, I've got...
He would say that.
I've got a photo somewhere from the club, a big, about a foot high, that says it's got all my games on it. So it's definitely 331.
Where's this 304 come from then, AD?
Well, it depends, because obviously when we're looking at the appearances, well, I go on to on various things. Never trust Wikipedia, because
Wikipedia is league games
only.
Only
league games. Soccer base is normally pretty good. But yeah, I didn't actually check the, like, our good friend
Tim Carter, but that would have been no good because yeah, the book finished partway through Chapper's career. So apart from that, yeah, well done, AD. Now, don't get me wrong, AD's background research is usually pretty meticulous, but today, thankfully, Chappers was our subject matter was able to clear it up in one fell swoop. So that's the end of that. Chappers, welcome to the Albion Roar. Finally got you on after what feels like an eternity. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm busy. I've got stuff doing. I just can't make it tonight. Yeah, so for the 400th consecutive week, you know. Anyway, welcome to the Roar. Thanks for coming along.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm usually washing my hair as well, Ian, so, you know.
All right, do you want to, let's start at the beginning, Chappers. I mean, obviously, we know you're Brighton born and bred.
Yeah.
This is where the only bit of sort of like name-dropping clanging I could ever do is that, you know, I think I know that we were in the same school year. And growing up in Brighton, I was at Dorothy Stringer. You were at Long Hill. Long Hill won everything that year. Cricket, rugby, football, tiddlywinks, kerplunk, the works. But that's where I first remember you. And people, even in my school year, remember, you know, this sort of talented kid that that Long Hill have got. Tell us about your time sort of as a schoolboy growing into playing for Brighton Boys and playing for the Albion.
Yeah, I started off at White Oak Football Club as a kid with Johnny Cullen, our manager there. And I played a year above. So was over for quite a few years. And then another fella called Bill Tate took over after him, and they we had quite a good side. We started off like a poor side, but then gradually picked up to being quite a good side. And he sent me for trials for the Lillishaw, so that's really how we got started. You know, but from a young age, obviously played from about 9-10 years of age, and was back in them days, I was mainly a goal scoring midfield player.
Well, to be honest, all the talented kids, all the 13-year-olds were they were in midfield. I mean, you don't stick the really good kid at left back, do you?
No, it was actually when I went to Lillishaw, and Dave Sexton, obviously you probably know, you know, very well, Man United. He said to me, I was about 15, 16, he said to me that he said, you will make a pro. He said, but you'll be a left back, or if you grow, you'll be a centre half. So obviously the centre half thing never worked because I never got 5'9". But you know, he was quite certain that I'd end up being a fullback.
What made him think that you have your defensive qualities were better than your attacking qualities even at that time?
Yeah, it was when we went to the trials, and we went to obviously regional. When you go to Lillishaw, you go, there was to start with, there was like regional trials and what have you. And I end up, when we first went there, honestly, I'd only ever played midfield or up front or whatever, or behind the front man or whatever. And always used to get loads of goals. Just scored many goals as a kid.
Yeah, I remember, mate.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it was like in the trial they moved people about, obviously, and they went, you know, not him, it was the other scouts at the time, can you go left back? So they put me left back, and obviously he must have seen something in there we liked to, in that position. And possibly there was probably more attacking options that they thought were better than me in them positions, so I ended up left back.
Sure. Yeah. When I was looking into this, I read that the people actually at the Centre of Excellence weren't necessarily the best people in the country, but people they thought would make it. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I think back then it was like, I mean, it'd be different nowadays because obviously it looks so much more into how you're going to develop. You know, obviously they looked at me nowadays, I'd never be tall, big enough to be a fullback at, you know, a good level. But back then it was like obviously looking forward. And we had quite a few lads in our group who come through. Mark Robbins, who was at Man United, who saved Ferguson's job, he was in our group. Jason Beckford, Man City. So we had quite a number of kids come through. And there was, back at the time, you know, thinking about when you play, when I did play for like Brighton Boys and what have you, there was other lads around the country who were decent but didn't make it, maybe because they was like overgrown for the, you know, that size, you know, when you're sort of 14, 15, they were really big lads and fully formed already. Mm.
But when they started like doing this entry, there was quite a big thing, wasn't it? I mean, there was a lot of like a media splash about the whole thing because it was something quite new at the time.
Yeah, we were the guinea pigs. We were the first group there. We was the first ever group, so it was we was the, you know, say the guinea pigs of it. And it was quite difficult because obviously they was teething, you know, it was teething problems then as well because it was the first time they'd ever done it. It was 25 boys going away to live in up in obviously Littleshore for 2 years. And a bit of trial and error, really. And we had two or three lads left because they were homesick. And obviously, after our group, we had quite a few lads made it as pros, but no one really, I don't think, made it into any England squads. But after that, obviously, over the years, they had people like Michael Owen come through and people like that, I think, Jamie Carragher. So eventually, the scheme worked. But when we started it, it was probably obviously a little bit early and they weren't really sure what they was going into. You know, so when I look back, that's how I look at it.
I was about to say, what did you make of it? What, I mean, obviously you progressed and got better, but, you know, I don't suppose obviously you're looking at the politics of it, but what did you get out of it?
Well, I say, I was only 14, so it made me grow up straight away. You know, you're going away, you're living with like 24 lads, like 24/7, and you're away from your parents, from your friends. And it probably helped me that time because, you know, you're 14, it's an age where you can get into other things. And, you know, obviously, because I was up there, it was football, you know, through and through. So that side was really good. And where I think it really helped me was because I was one of the youngest ones up there for my age group. When I come back to Brighton, being only 16, I'd done a lot of the training already. And where I was training every day, physically, I was probably like an 18, 19-year-old rather than a 16-year-old. So when we was doing stuff at the club, I'd probably done a lot of that already, and that really helped me to progress. Now, being at school, you know, I'm very honest with you, there was lads there who probably were better footballers than me who went to Arsenal, West Ham, wherever it may be, top premiership clubs, League One clubs at the time, and a lot of them never made it because they never got an opportunity. Where I come to Brighton, back then, if you was a left-back in the reserves and the left-back got injured in the first team, you come in. So it gave me a chance to elevate me forward and give me a great chance and to start at such a young age as a pro.
Yeah. Aidy, there is one thing I do have to ask. While we're still talking about Chappers as a teenager, and this is before Brighton and Hove Albion, Welly.
Brilliant. Yeah, right. Welly's, even now, my school friends, because I left Long Hill at 14, obviously, to go to Littleshore. Yep. So, but even up till then, from the age of 5, 6, I mean, you probably remember yourselves, back in the day, you'd have a 20-a-side game out in the street, and everyone chasing the ball around. And anyway, one time I didn't, I wore some wellies out playing football. I'd done the story's evolved since then. People have obviously made more of it. They see it boiling hot, they were cut down, they were red. They were normal wellies. It was a rainy day and it stuck. Someone said welly, and from then onwards, it's always been the same. And I still see people now, which is really great, from school and what have you. And a lot of them will still go, hello, welly, how are you? And it's, you know, people don't know, sort of look at me and say, what's all this about? But that's where it come from. But they was not cut down and they wasn't red.
Okay, well, you were the first graduate from the scheme. And it was all over the national news, I remember. And it was away at Birmingham on Valentine's Day in 1987. And you even got a goal line clearance in there.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, when I look back, the side we had, I mean, the side was struggling that year. That, you know, I'll be honest, that's why I got my chance, because the side was struggling and looking towards relegation. And we had, I mean, some of the players, you know, Danny Wilson, obviously Dean Saunders, Eric Young, John Keely. It was such a good side, Terry Connor. And for some reason, at the time, the club was in a bit of a downward spiral. Shouldn't have been. But for me, a great experience to find out that I was playing. When I joined Brighton, Alan Mullery was manager and Barry Lloyd was youth team manager. And obviously, Muller's left after, I think it was only 6-7 months or whatever, and Barry took over. So Barry knew me. And obviously, he'd had me in the youth team and he'd give me an opportunity. And to be fair to Muller's, one thing I always remember is that he actually called me. It must have been in the press the night before, and he called me up and wished me all the best. And, said it was a bit earlier than I would have put you in, but, like, you know, really pleased that you've got your chance from over here. So, you know, that was really good.
And that was because Chris Hutchins got injured, wasn't it?
Chris Hutchins got injured, you know, and it's a weird thing. When I was at Lillishaw, I remember coming back. As a kid, I could have signed for quite a few clubs because obviously I was at Lillishaw and lots of publicity. And but I didn't. Brian wanted to sign me. I come back and played at 15. I think I played in the reserves at Goldstone. I think it was against Ipswich. And I always wanted to sign for the club, but I didn't think it was worth signing for the club because back then you got a pair of boots as spot, you know, whatever, for signing for a club. And I was at Lillishaw, so we got boots anyway. So it wouldn't have helped, but I always wanted to sign for the club. And I always remember they invited me down to a game. It was against Notts County. And after the game, they won 2-1. And Chris Catlin took me into his office and said to me, like, I want you to sign. And, you know, don't you'll always be special here. Don't sign for no one else. And then I said, well, I will sign. But I ain't signing yet. I'll sign when I leave Lillishaw. And he said, well, if that's what you want to do. And he half gave me a bit of a volley, which was a little bit, you know, not nice for a young kid. And I was like, oh, okay. And then when he walked out, I think it was George Petchy come in and said, what he's trying to say is that we'll sign you whenever you want to sign. So he screamed it.
And I always remember... Chris Callan doesn't really do diplomacy. Yeah.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. They just won 2-1. So he was on a bit of a high as well, I think. And it, I always remember, one of the funniest things, remember, they sent Frank Worthington in. And he sat down and he said, the club want to sign you, you know. And he said to me, don't worry about training too hard. Just make sure loads of ball work, loads of skills. It was just like, you know, forget everything else.
Yeah. Okay. All things you're going to learn from Frank Worthington.
No, don't send Frank Worthington. Yeah.
Did he teach you anything else?
No. But he was 16.
Yeah, well, you know, you can still wear a fedora at 16, mate. You can still do it. But yeah. Okay, but let's rewind a little bit because I mean you grew up in the town and you were a big Brighton fan. Yeah. I mean, and as tell us about your Albion supporting history. What was your first game?
Yeah, I can't remember the first game. So we used to go quite a bit. My stepfather used to take me all the time. I first went when you stand in the south stand. And I had a couple of times where we scored and I was on the crate at the front and got smashed against the wall at the front. That was nice. But I was mainly around the sort of the Peter Ward era, that, you know, them sort of players. I just remember coming to the game, coming down from the station sometimes and coming down the stairs where I think underneath, I remember it used to come in the back and come towards the back of the church, towards the south goal.
Yeah.
And I just remember standing by, coming past the church and looking through and seeing the, you know, massive crowd and, I love the club, you know, always watched the club and very fortunate I got taken from a young age. And so probably quite lucky as a fan that when I started watching, it was a real good time, you know, some really good players at the football club.
Yeah, and we were just getting promoted into the first division at the time as well.
Yeah.
And it was an exciting time to be around. So, I mean, obviously that would have stuck with you. So, like, but
the point about that is that anyone who is probably in the late 40s, certainly early 50s, and I think I can speak for a lot of people who've stuck with the Albion since those late 70s, is that it was a magic time to start supporting the Albion. Now, if you started supporting the Albion in the early 90s, you need your bumps felt, frankly. But, and nothing personal, I know you were playing Chappers, but you saw the direction of travel.
No, of course, absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
But when you saw it in the early 70s with Peter Ward's magic and Brian Horne and this firebrand of Alan Mullery, you kind of have these pockets of ages by which people support the club. So when you're sort of 8 or 9, I mean, probably like now, you're 8 or 9 years old, you're going to get this next generation of kids who are going to stick with it.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Because you're on a buzz. And this is the point I would make is that, you know, from 77, 78, when you and I started watching it, you probably a couple of years later and you're still on a high. those are the things that are magic and stay with you forever. And you can't even necessarily put it to words. It's the memories that you just take with you forever, isn't it, Ian?
Yeah. I was fortunate at the age of, I think it was 12, I was a mascot against Coventry. And just remember, I went to the ground and they give me a kit and I went out with the team, and just the whole lot of it was just such a big thing, you know, to be part of Brighton. And then eventually I started going on my own when I was a little bit older. Remember going to Brighton West Ham, went in the North Stand. I didn't do that again after that game. And they'll come over as a 12-year-old and never run so fast in my life. But just the whole bit of it, you know, fortunate to go to the cup final. The first, I didn't go to the second one, but I went to the replay, but I went to the first game, went to the semi-final, was Jimmy Case scoring against Norwich. And then, you know, I got, for me, the club was just such a big part of my life. And to have the opportunity then to be part of it was, you know, it was brilliant.
Okay, well, let's get back to, like, playing then. And now, the game after you made your debut, I mean, Barry Lloyd said in his programme notes that the progression of the young local talent had been hindered and he was going to put that right. It didn't happen overnight, though, did it?
No. I, that season, I played that game. I think I played four or five towards the end of the season. I think it was the first year. I think that's right. And then, obviously, the club went down. And then the following season, he put a really good squad together. So I was travelling most weeks with the team, but always sort of, because I think back then it was only one sub. So it was 13. I probably would have gotten early if there'd been four or five subs, like it's now, or seven, where it's nowadays, you'd get games. But back then, one sub, I was travelling loads with the team, playing in the reserves loads. And it was quite funny because one of the first games the following season, I played for the youth team. And we played a Southampton youth side. And a certain Mr. Shearer, I think he scored about four or five. And we got beat 8-0, I think it was 8-1 or something. And he called me big time because I'd already been in the first team. And I said to him, what have you done?
Yeah, smash five past you, thanks. Yeah.
What have you ever done in the game? You know, so... It was quite a weird one to be around it, and then obviously the following year to just be travelling loads of it. But we had a good side. There was some really good old pros in that team. You know, big Doug Groovy and people like that had come in and took the club forward again.
I mean, I was going to say, but I mean, because there was a lot of big characters in that squad. What was the dressing room like for a young whippersnapper like you interloping?
Yeah, the change has always been a weird one for me. You just, as an apprentice, I mean, I only did 1 year apprenticeship because I did well and I signed a pro straight away at 17. So, but you used to walk in and you'd be told to clear off out, not knock the door for you, come in and, you know, that sort of stuff. And then when that group came in, it was quite a close group and there was loads of strong characters, real strong characters. And you couldn't be too leery around them because you get put in your place. But at the same time, I think, you know, you principally wise, you learned a lot from him in training and that side of the game and, you know, how you should act in training and whatever. So that was a good side of it, but it was very hard to break in that squad because it's quite an experienced squad.
Yeah. Al?
That was the question I was going to ask, actually.
Oh, there you go. You know, there was some season, like, internationals there. I mean, someone like Jerry Armstrong, for instance, it was not long after he scored that famous goal for Northern Ireland against Spain in the World Cup. And, you know, he was a big name to come down here. And it was, but like you said, there was only one sub and he was into that squad.
Yeah, but Jerry was one of the nicest men I met in football, considering what he'd achieved and, you know, and what he'd done. And, you know, obviously that World Cup, obviously he's famous now for scoring the goal. But he was such a nice man and he was so... He was one person because he played when he came down. He did play loads. He played in reserves quite a bit, as well as the first team. And when he was with the lads, you could speak to you, teach you on the pitch, he'd speak to you about how you're playing, what you're doing, and after the game. So he was a real, you know, he's one player who I feel did have a big bearing on a lot of the younger lads. Where some of them just, you know, not those at the end of their career, and they was there to play in the first team, and that was it.
Right, just fast forwarding to 1989, then, Chappers. Now, last week, we had a chap on the show called Keith Cuss. Does that name ring a bell to you by any chance?
It doesn't, but he's quite good in the air. Keith Cuss.
Were you playing in that game? What do you remember?
It was funny because I'll tell you why I remember it, because it's one of the games I got the biggest roasting. So David White absolutely ripped me apart. I couldn't get near him. And we won, obviously won the game 2-1 in the end, as you're going to about speak about. And it got a bit fresh just late on. I think we were probably winning 2-1 at the time, and the ball's gone to him, and he's gone to him, he's flicked it, he's headed it into the crowd. I do believe, you probably know this, he got sacked, I think, over it, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
You know, so sad. But he was, you know, the oldest ball boy in the world, Keith Cuss, bless him. And,
do you remember the incident, though, Chappers?
I think I do. I'm thinking about now, I'm sure it was in the West, he sat in front of the West Stand, I'm sure it was there, and he flicked it on. But it was a game where... I say they was obviously come down and a big, you know, massive club, Man City, and we, I think it was like we needed to get a result. We weren't like desperate to get a result. We had to get some results towards the end of the season. It was, and obviously it was a massive result for us. But I say I remember it for the wrong reasons, because even like the, because I got such a run around from David White, and it was, I put something up on Facebook the other day. I went to the Brighton Man City game, and Malcolm Stewart, as we know, ex physio and what have you, always got something to say for himself. Straight away, you know, I put a thing up watching Brighton, come on Brighton or whatever, and he put, he's David White there. That's what he put, he's like, after all this time, he's still bringing I said, I wouldn't recognise him unless he is back to me.
Hey. No, you're quite right. I mean, and for those who want to listen to the show with us talking to Keith Cuss, he was an absolute dream. It's on our archive. Just go to Audio Boom, search for Albion Raw, where you'd normally find your podcast. Just go there. And listen to Keith Cuss. He tells the story in the minutest details and lifts the lid on a fair few things that did or didn't happen around the club. But yeah, it was. It's just kind of interesting to see a player's point of view. But
I mean, back in the day, we didn't mind it at all. You know, it slowed the game down for a minute or two and got us to get in our shape and what have you.
I mean, it was the 89th minute. So
was it that late? Was it, I didn't know that. Was that when it was 89th minute?
Yeah,
it was. Yeah.
Why the club, you know, why get rid of him over it? You know what I mean? Just literally move him out of the way for a couple of weeks and then bring him back in.
Well, do you remember Stephen Rook then? I mean, it was him that told him to go. So
was it really?
So when you were playing at the Goldstone, obviously as a defender, especially playing against the top sides in the second division, you obviously had to take great care as a defender, especially when, you know, the forwards would come through and they fluff their chance. But you're quite good at clearing stuff off the line, aren't you?
Yeah, I think you're talking about the famous great player, Gordon Strachan. Remember the goalkeeper? Remember the goalie pulled it back for me? And to this day, I swear to you, I just think I'll have a nice touch and play out and roll it out for a throw-on. And as I touched it, it popped up, hit the middle of the shin. And the greatest picture is the fella chasing it, the supporter, grabbing the fence and rattling the fence and shouting at me.
Well, we're basically, for those who've never seen it, I hope it's on YouTube somewhere.
Oh, it is. Just put it in Chapman Own Goal. It's on there.
People is it? Brilliant. Yeah. Okay. Well, the thing is, to be fair, it looked like the Goldstone pitch looked like you were playing on the moon in those days. But above me on that, we're not going to offer you any solace whatsoever.
Don't deserve it.
But, okay, I mean, just rewinding slightly, the 87-88 promotion season, you didn't really get much of a look in.
No.
It wasn't until the season after where it was actually March 89 where you got your first real run in the team. So talk to me about that, about being the first team regular for the first time.
Yeah, I can't remember when that time was. I can't remember the games at that time, but I just, you know, I was always around it anyway. I was around it loads. It was like, obviously, always trained with the first team, so I was always part of it. And then, obviously, to get in the side and then start playing regularly with, you know, obviously, Dean Wilkins in front of me quite a bit. It's funny with the club because you always feel the best side I played with, obviously, around that time. We had some really good sides. And obviously Bremner and Nelson, you know, really good players. And it makes your job so much easier. And then when you're playing with them regularly, we'd go to places. I think it was in the Championship then. And we had a good side. We'd give anyone a game in around that sort of level. And then over the years, it sort of diminished. It made, you know, it become very difficult towards the end.
Yeah, I mean that promotion team was one of my favourite teams of all time, actually.
Yes.
It was.
Yeah. So much so that Chappers wasn't in it. Well done, Aid.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he was watching. He was a fan.
I was a fan, yeah.
Going forward, you know, you started to become more regular and you started scoring goals.
Yeah, to get in the side regularly, I mean, I suppose around that sort of 19 years of age, just, you know, I started to play regularly. And it's a strange one now. I look back and we had some really good side, had some good times and what have you. And I just felt that we... I didn't really see what was happening behind the scenes so much. And it was just, you know, the club was obviously going one way, which was really disappointing. You know, but playing regularly from hometown club, I loved it. And you know, it wouldn't change anything. I just thought that we, you know, when Barry Lloyd was a really, for me, he was a really good manager, obviously done really well for me. But there was so many things going on at the club at the time that I say after this sort of age 19, 20, 21 playing, it became quite difficult at the club, you know, because of the circumstances.
One thing I think that people tend to forget is that, I mean, people think of Ian Chapman, Brighton left back. But, I mean, as your career progressed, certainly through the early 90s, you actually were shifted a lot more, either it's a wide midfield, but certainly a lot more into centre midfield. So was that something that you were comfortable with, or was it something that you were just told to get on with? I mean, what was the thinking behind that move?
No, I didn't want to play midfield. It's going back earlier to when I said about when I see Chris Catlin, one thing he said to me was that we want you to sign the club. We want you to get the spikes on. We're going to make you into a left winger. And I just looked at him as if to say, that's never going to happen. You know, no pace, can't do that. Well, I actually enjoyed playing middle of the park. Really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it there. I thought I could do all right in that position. And obviously, when sometimes I actually prefer playing in there. I just, you know, but it's so obviously you want to get in the team. That's the first and foremost. I think the club brought in Bernie Gallagher, and he started to play left back quite a bit. And I went inside with, do you remember the lad, Dave Clarkson? I enjoyed playing with Dave.
Wow, yes. Now there's a name for the past.
Yeah, I enjoyed playing with him because he had so much energy. And we done our work together and I got quite a few goals. I was quite lucky. The two times I played midfield and I got quite a few games and I got a few goals, I'd done an ankle injury once against, did we play against a New Zealand or something in a friendly?
I remember that, yeah, 2-2.
Yeah, played in that and done the ankle ligaments. And the other one we played, I think it was against Brentford. And the next time I was in, and I'd done both the ankle in one game. So both times I went in midfield and started doing well and getting goals, I've come out of the team for a month with injury. So, but I enjoy playing middle of the park.
Actually, tell us about it, because you've just given us a name there. Now, this is one of those names that for me is one of those the fish that got away kind of stories. And I caught up with him on social media probably about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. I said, Dave Clarkson, are you the Dave Clarkson that spent, and I couldn't work remember how long it was. I think I worked out it was about 12 and a half minutes that he was with us. I think it was actually about 15, 20 games. But he was someone that I actually saw brought a bit of sparkle and drive and razzmatazz in certain places where, as a team, and it's not about you or anyone particular, but the team was getting a bit moribund, and he brought this bit of pizzazz. Is that who he was?
Yeah, he just had really, he was really enthusiastic, great energy, and he was quite a naive sort of lad. So he had nothing about him that was arrogant or nothing. He just got on with it, and he in games he was like a rash on people. He'd get all over people. He was quick. I really, really enjoyed playing with him because when I played with him, it meant I could sit a little bit more and he'd go forward quite a bit. And we just got, and I scored a few from outside the box when he was playing with him because it gave me a bit of space because he could, you know, he could move and all that. But for some reason, I don't know what happened. He sort of, within, like you say, within a month or two, he'd gone.
I think he ended up saying to us, I mean, and I'll see if I can track him down again and we'll have him on the Raw, but he seemed to say he got an offer for somewhere else. And I can't remember what it was, whether it was back in Australia or over here, and he saw the direction Brighton was going, and he decided to go, and then sort of about 5 minutes later regretted it and really wanted to come back. By that time it was too late. We'll get him on the Raw and discuss this, but he was I don't know if there's a sort of subgenre you can have of favorite players who weren't here long enough, kind of thing.
The thing is, I mean, when you talk about, I mean, obviously I was at the club 10 years, and I played with some great players. You never made it, really. You know, I mean, made it, but not loads of games. AD Elwers, do you remember AD Elwers?
Yeah.
AD Elwers was so skillful in training. You didn't want to go man for man, but he was so good. Del Jasper, God, you know, rest in peace, Del, lovely fella Del. And he had, you know, brilliant foot, the two good feet. And they were lads who come into the club and didn't really, they played, but not like they should have played. You know, they should have played 100, 200 games for the club, but they didn't.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you know.
Mike Trusson is another one who had a bit of bite about him as well.
Yeah, Truss was a little bit older, Truss. I mean, he'd been there and played in like, obviously, the other clubs up north and what have you, and he was like more of a journeyman. But they, like I say, Del Jasper, ADL was probably 22, 23 or whatever, and shouldn't have spent a lot of time at the club. And it's weird sometimes that players in training really good and all that, but when you get games, you know, they're not the same, what have you.
Okay, well, there was definitely a downward slope, but before we get to that, there was a point in time where things could have been oh so different, and that was in 1991 when we got to the playoff final. We would have been back into the first division, which was the last, I think that was the last, would have been the last year as the first division before it became the Premier League. And, I mean, talk to us about the lead up going into that and about that game.
Yeah, it was, I mean, the season, I played about, I think about 25, 30 games and got injured against West Ham at home. And I was sort of sub quite a bit towards the end of it. And we obviously had the Ipswich game when Dino got the unbelievable free kick.
Yep.
Down at the Goulston, brilliant finish.
Phil Parks can't jump.
No, I've got to admit, he looked a little bit heavy that day. It was still a good goal.
It was a great goal.
Oh, great, you know, especially with, because it was quite late on, I think, was it, whatever, and it, you know, to score it like that, you know, in such a big game. And then, obviously, the two, I didn't feature in the first, I wasn't involved in the first one at home, but away from home, I was on the bench to come on. We got absolutely battered up there for about half hour, but ended up being that 2-1. And then the final, I again come on as sub, and it's another little gripe with me. I felt I should have played. I just think because of the pitch, and we were playing wing backs, and I was young. I think I should have played that day. But he went with Gats, who's experienced and older. But I just felt that we could have done with younger legs. That was only my opinion. I thought I should play, and obviously really disappointed. And you know what football's like. You don't really sit at the time after the game. You think, oh, so I'll be back here next year. You think it's going to be, you know, every year is going to be the same sort of thing. And obviously it was I remember walking around with Clive Walker after the game, and he said to me, "Chappers, take it in. You never know, you know, you might not come back here." You know, and he was getting on at the time. And I think he went back four times with Woking, and I never went back. He kept going back.
But it was a great team. Obviously, we had John Byrne, we had Mickey Small.
That was the game straight afterwards. They're interviewing Dean Wilkins on the pitch. He's in tears. We lost the game 3-0, and he completely forgot. Actually, no, Dean, it was 3-1. He scored a goal. He'd forgotten.
Dino was it? Yeah, I mean, I remember he crying his eyes out. Bless him, Dean. I think at the time, you don't understand. You don't realise how big it is, obviously, because like I say, you think you're going to be back there, and we had such a good side. I think while I was at the club, I was very fortunate to play with some really good forwards. I think, obviously, usually pairs Bremner and Nels, Smalley and Johnny Byrne. And the one I probably don't mention enough is probably Curt Nogan, who one season for about 4 months was unbelievable. And then I don't think he scored after that but for a long time.
Yeah.
But very fortunate to play with some really good strikers at the club. And I say, I think Smalley and Byrne, brilliant. And John Byrne, for me, was just unbelievable as a player. I think if he'd have been a yard quicker, he would have been at a top 6-7 side in the top league.
Yeah, we also had some really bad kits as well, Ian.
The old pink one.
But we'll talk about that in a minute. But first, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show is, of course, brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, and Phil has given us a shirt for us to have a look at this week. So who wants to have a go at describing this one?
Chappers, you're our guest.
One second.
Describe this disgusting.
It's like a lovely sort of purpley coloured top with it's like a Chewitz, sort of Chewitz all over it. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's a little bit like the old the pink one we had, is it Novo one we had at Brighton? It's a little bit like that.
Stars and suns.
I don't really I can't really describe it. It's hard to describe.
The fact is that it's got padding on it. It's a goalkeeper's top.
Oh, that's okay. It's got whatever. I didn't notice that. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. And I don't know if Phil's been mucking about with the badge or not. He's just put SO or I'm not sure. It's sponsored by Choice Personnel. No, it is. It's virtually impossible to describe. It's kind of like chronographs and stars and scars. It's one of those ones where, you know, you associate David Seaman and Renier Geese with just revolting football shirts because back in the day you could get away with it. Did Brighton actually ever have revolting shirts like that as their goalkeeper's aid? Did you recall?
Not really. No, they're all quite classy. Even when we had the Andy Pandy kit, the goalkeeper's kit was ruined by the shorts.
Well, yeah. So, but, yeah, it just looks like someone sneezed all their blood all over it. Yeah.
And any ideas who it is?
I'll give over.
I don't have a clue.
Okay. Well, I will tell you. In that case, I will tell you, and this is your shirt of the week from Phil Shelley's oldfootballshirts.com. This is the 1995 to 1996 goalkeeping shirt of the Midlands' least well-known side, Walsall. Nicknamed the Saddlers because they used to make an awful lot of saddles for horses in the area. They play at the 11,300 capacity Bescot Stadium, just off the M6 north of Birmingham. The side was formed in 1888 after the merger of Walsall Town and Walsall Swiss, and they were invited to help found the Football League Second Division in 1892. After yo-yoing between the bottom division and non-league football, they then helped to form the Football League Third Division North in 1921 and have remained a league side ever since. In their history, they have four grounds to call home: the Chuckery, where it all started, then a move to the West Bromwich Road Stadium until 1896, then to Fellows Park, where they stayed until 1990, and of course the current Bescot Stadium, which was opened a quarter of a mile from their old ground. With a few notable players through their squad over the years, former players of the season include Troy Deeney, Will Griggs, he's on fire, Matty Fryer, as well as the likes of Andy Rammell, are never forgiven for that handball at Wickham, says Phil. Michael Wickets and Tommy Mooney as well. And one of the most surprising ones he found was that Alan Sniffer Clark began his career with the Saddlers and playing 72 times between 1963 and 1966. There's a few Brighton links and a relevant link to this particular shirt. I see where he's gone here. Trevor Wood kept goal for the Saddlers between 1994 and 1997. Trevor was with Brighton between 1986 and 1988. Steve Claridge, who had a memorable couple of games for the Albion in the Palookaville kits of 2004, also played for Walsall in 2006. In the current squad, you'll find Stephen Ward, who played for the Albion on loan from Wolves in 2013 and 14, and was expected to sign permanently until the promise of Ashley Brown's camaraderie and the bright lights of Burnley lured him up the M6 to turf ball. But also, continuing the education, there is on loan Seagulls goalkeeper Cole Rushworth, who's made 13 appearances this season, and was also on loan at Worthing, where we saw quite a lot of him, actually. He's brilliant.
He is, actually. Walsall have got a very good goalkeeper this season, and he's 20. And I know they say about Madrid or Barcelona or whatever it is looking at him. I mean, basically anyone from anywhere could be saying they're looking at him. But, yeah, he's a genuine talent. But, yes, thank you very much indeed for that, Phil. Yeah. It is a revolting shirt. The Trevor Wood thing is an in-joke. We're not going there. But if you want to have a look at that and 120,000 other shirts, go to oldfootballshirts.com. And yeah, if it's a rainy day and you've got nothing else to do, just skate your way through the myriad shirts that are there. And thanks indeed to Phil for sponsoring our show, which he has done since the year dot, really, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Cheers, mate.
Yep. Okay. So, I mean, while we're talking about kits here, you might as well. What was your favourite Albion kit that you ever wore?
I like the one. Oh God, 86 for the white, the blue with the white going across the front.
I know what you mean.
Yeah,
that's my favourite. Or the Phoenix one.
The Phoenix. Yeah, what was the other one? The Phoenix one, and what one was the other one?
Nobbo.
No, not the Nobbo. Before the Nobbo, it was in Adidas kits back then, weren't they?
Yeah, it was Phoenix Brewery who was sponsored it. Nobbo sponsored it. But yeah, because did you ever wear the red one?
Yeah, we did, yeah. Yeah, wore the red one. We also, there was another kit we wore, which don't get mentioned. We wore a white one once down at Pompey, all white kit. It was really nice, but I think we only wore it once.
I told you this. What it is the story is that we've got, famously, we managed to acquire some of the red shirts that were worn famously at that Peterborough game in the snow.
Yeah.
Yeah, FA Cup game. And I said that was our third choice shirt that season, and the others wouldn't have it. And I said, well, they only started wearing it, or they wore it one time, and it was seen to be lucky. So the second choice shirt hadn't been worn. I said the second choice shirt was white. And the point is that I don't think anyone has ever seen a copy of this white shirt unless it was held over from the previous season. So maybe if you were there, Chappers, if you remember, was the white shirt used for two seasons. God, I'm asking questions from 35 years ago.
I couldn't remember that.
It wouldn't have been, Al, because we changed sponsor, because it was Phoenix Brewery. We had that shirt for two seasons, but one season was Phoenix Brewery and the other season was Nobo. So
it was a really smart kit, though, the white one. Yeah. It was really smart.
It's my favourite. Okay, well, after the playoffs in 91, things started to slide a little bit. We lost a few of the players and it was moving downhill. I mean, Barry Lloyd was not always the most popular manager on the terraces.
No.
How did the players feel about that? And because, I mean, he was quite popular with the players, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. I like, obviously, give him my chance. So I like Barry. He was very good. What Barry was good at was with the... First and foremost, when he was a youth team manager, he was a really good coach. And not people know that, because when he became manager, he didn't really coach much. And obviously, when other things took over, he started going more into the board side, you know, boardroom side of things. And he, I think, he lost his way a little bit. But the senior players loved playing for him because he gave him a free hand as such. And a lot of people like myself who were young used to get all the volleys and turning off when things went wrong. But he was very good with the senior lads. And I think he was a good manager. And apparently, when he left, he asked for the same budget the following year. Obviously, when we got to the playoffs, he asked for the same budget. And I think we'd have gone close again because, you know, we had a good squad there. But unfortunately, the club started splitting the squad up and we lost, I think it was Budgie and Small, wasn't it, quite quickly.
Yeah.
And I could see, you know, without Dominic Rudley, 20 of the players I played with, but the quality of the player obviously started to go downhill from what it was. Because the club went to bring a few younger players in. We brought lads from, you know, Tottenham and Arsenal sort of reserves who were only young. Probably got talent, but you need to mix them with, you know, good senior players. And I just think the club just struggled around it at that sort of time to do that.
Now, there's one thing, I mean, like I say, I certainly remember those times and you know, the number of times when the fans would be singing for Barry to go.
Yeah.
I think that because they couldn't see what was going on. And it was a short, sharp realisation about 3 or 4 years later with that benefit of hindsight, you realise, wow, because you know he was both the team manager and the managing director for a short while, but he was also had to be a bit of a scout as well, and his scouting I think was actually seen as pretty good.
He
unearthed Byrne and Nelson and Small
and a Russian. The guy and the other fella,
and a Romanian, Stefan
Romanian.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
He managed to get them here. And like you say, I mean, by the time it was that he decided to go, and I think that with hindsight, maybe people knew it at the time, I don't know, but certainly with 30 years hindsight, what David Bellotti did in getting rid of him was, I think, more of a populist decision rather than a practical one. Because, I mean, the club asked an awful lot of him. And I think that for those who still go by their decision to think that Barry Lloyd should have gone and it was a great time to celebrate his disappearance, his exit, I think maybe some revisionist history might be in order to actually sort of think about, you know, what the bloke did do for the club.
Yeah, he was probably, by the end of it, stretched too far, you know, and I think by the end of it, it become too much for him. A little story about that. We went to an away game and he said to Martin Inchwood, Martin, can you do some set plays today? So we get up to this hotel. Barry didn't come out. And Martin, for 20 minutes, half hour after training, we did set plays. And then and that was on the Friday. Obviously, we go to the hotel. The following day, we go to the game. And Barry Lloyd leads a team out. the person who was the vocal boy in the set plays was sitting in the stand. He wouldn't even be in the team.
Oh dear.
So I think, but by then we lost the part a little bit. I think he had too much going on in his mind.
Okay. With all that stuff going on, and with Barry's exit and what have you, I mean, I know that you just said earlier in the show that you weren't really sort of plugging yourself into what was going on in the boardroom.
No, and
I think for the most part, you know, players shouldn't have to know what's going on in the boardroom, apart from knowing that their job's still going to be okay. But I mean, you've got to know that there were rumblings. But is it something that you just had to put aside as a professional, or as a Brighton fan, did it start to worry you at all?
No, it did do. I mean, you know, we had times where, I mean, obviously I had a mortgage and we didn't get paid for, I don't know, a couple of months, 2 or 3 months, or whatever. We had no money coming in. You know, the club didn't play us at that time, and the league had to get involved. You know, and it was a real difficult time. But, you know, for me, it's because I obviously wanted to be at the club. It was, you know, my club. I probably buried it a lot and didn't, you know, didn't speak about it a lot because I just wanted to play for the club. But when I look back now at times, it was a real difficult place to be. And I just feel that the saga that went on with everything, it was just toxic, and it just, you know, it's got worse and worse. And I say, when you're playing, you obviously do get on with it, but then as well as worrying about football, then you're worrying about not getting paid. You know, it's the same as always that the lower leagues, that the money's not the same, you know, as what the top leagues are. So, you know, your normal money and all that. And it was a real difficult time, but I'd say for me, it was just a case of just getting my head down, getting on with it. But it was really difficult. And unfortunately, when you see the level of player coming into the club, and you know, you ain't stupid. You can see that they're having to get rid of some big players to bring players in they can afford.
Yeah, but we actually brought in a big manager, really, in the name of Liam Brady, which was at the time it seemed like that was a major coup. But it was just a firefighter, really, wasn't he?
Yeah, again, he came in a lot. You know, Liam was good. He came in with great ideas and what have you. But you know, a football club, I feel you can only do so much. You know, as a manager, if you ain't got the players to implement what you want, you're going to struggle. And I just think with Liam, you know, the players he was bringing in that we were getting just went up to the level at times. And that's not his fault. It's, you know, you get a budget and you've got to deal with that. And I just think it was really difficult for him. And in the end, when you look back after all the stuff going on, you know, Bellotti behind the scene and all that, Archer, you know, it was a horrible time at the club. And, you know, thankfully, you know, the club had come out the other side eventually. But, you know, not after, only after all the other stuff had gone on.
It was a really, really tough time. I mean, Liam did go on to have a major part of actually where the club is now, to be fair, in the fact that, you know, he did put together that consortium with Dick. But, I mean, but in order to do so, he had to leave the club, and Jimmy Case came in, and it was Jimmy who actually released you.
Yeah, strange one, really. I didn't want to leave the club. You know, obviously Jimmy decided to go another way, which was fine. I never had a fallout of him. Disappointed, really. Got a massive respect for Jimmy as a player and what have you. I love watching Jim and all that. But you know, I just think when you come out of it, when I've gone on the other side, not obviously that level, but management and what have you, it ain't personal. It's football, and you just, you know, it's one of them things. I don't think she got rid of me. You know, I think I was better than what he had there. But at the same time, it's you know, I see Jim when I do see Jim now. There's no problem with it because you know, it's happened, and you move on from it all.
Did you play with Jimmy? You must have done.
Yeah, I played midfield with Jimmy again. Yeah, and you know, it was a hard time for Jimmy. You know, Jim comes to the club. He had Jerry Ryan with him. You know, and it was a real difficult time. And I just think that you know, Jimmy, it was his first proper job, and he wasn't really a coach, and he didn't really have a coach with him. Yeah, Jerry didn't really, you know, Jerry's FB and George Petchy, but it was just a hard time. And I said, I only had the one season with Jim, and then he let me go. You know, I was gutted, you know, if I'm going to be honest with you, because I didn't want to leave the club. I loved the club and didn't want to leave it. You know, but at the end of the day, it was the club's decision. And I almost come back actually after I'd done my cruise ship about 2 years later when I went up to Gillingham and come back. I needed to come back to the club, but I just couldn't get over my injury, which was a shame because I was desperate to get back.
Oh, that would have been good. I mean, especially you know, at that time when all hands to the pump, and especially someone who got it, someone who understood what was needed and what was necessary. And I guess probably one way to sort of sign off your Albion career is winning Player of the Season. What does that mean to you or to any given player to win the Player of the Season?
Yeah, brilliant. You know, it was. Obviously, I knew I was leaving the club, and then obviously got the award. My biggest gut of all of it was the fact that it was obviously I played in the game that got abandoned, the York. And I in training, I've done me glute. I didn't play in the following game, so I never really got a chance to say goodbye to the fans. You know, like how I would like to have done after, you know, being there for so long. But obviously, you know, really proud to have got that. You know, that award, and you know, I can't be sure. I love playing for the club. I feel very fortunate to have played for the club, and obviously to leave on a sell note, as in to leave the club, but then to get the player award, it softened it a little bit. Yeah.
What did you get?
Oh, we got I've got a telly from
Reader Fusion.
A little telly from I think it's sponsored by Donatello back then. I'm sure he bought me a telly. I think it's a little red telly.
Because I remember, I mean, obviously, it was the Player of the Season award historically was always sponsored by Rediffusion, and they, yeah. And back in the days, obviously, not the flat screen jobbies you have now. They used to have to wheel these things onto the pitch. And like,
it was like, the player like
trying to Hulk them off the.
It was only
the
a small pitch. One. It wasn't full size telly. It was a little.
But that wasn't completely the end of the story for your Chappers. I mean, you can't keep a good man away. So what age did you have to say, right, enough's enough?
I left that season, which was 97. Yeah, and went to Gillingham. I had a two-year deal there. And after I played the first season, and then start next season, I've done my cruise ship.
You only played 20 games for them.
I played first, about 20 games first season. And then I done my cruciate second season, and I could have gone on loan to a few clubs, could have gone on loan and then done my cruciate, and it was a weird one because Pulis, I didn't really go on with Tony Pulis, he wasn't really my cup of tea, but he said to me about signing a new deal and all that, and then I done my cruciate and the deal disappeared, unfortunately. But then he paid me up, and I come and did my rehab at Brighton, and that's when I was training quite regularly, and I think I played about six reserve games. And Jeff Wood was in charge.
Okay.
Nobby was in charge to start with. Nobby was there, and then he left, and then Jeff took over. And Jeff spoke to me about obviously signing and what have you. But I just couldn't get my knee right. It just wasn't right, and so then I ended up retiring. And that was in 98, I think.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, but in total, you did actually come back to the Albion, and it was a different time, a different stadium. And it was
calling it a stadium is pushing it, mate.
Well, yeah, well, still a stadium to me. It was under your old mucker Dean Wilkins who brought you back.
Yeah, I come back. I was at Whitehawk, and Dean asked me to come. Well, I did the first 6 months. I did part time. I was still running Whitehawk, so I just come in to help training with the training every day. That side of things, and the following season, I signed. Obviously, left Whitehawk and come full time. And again, it was when I come in. Dean had a dream of playing all local players in the front side, and we had quite a few of them, obviously blooded. And I'd taken a lot of them boys when they were 12 and under 13 at Brighton. I did the kids then, so I had all like Tommy Alfix, all them sort of lads, all come through with me. Tommy Fraser, Joe Gattin, Joe Lynch. So I knew them all. So anyway, come back to the club, really enjoyed it. I think we come seventh, I think it was, end of the season. But, just missed out on the playoffs, which I thought was quite decent considering what we had, you know, what we had at the club sort of thing, what we brought forward. And obviously brilliant. Then, yeah, and Mickey Adams, apparently, Dino found me out one afternoon and said, Chappers, I've been sacked. And I couldn't believe it, really, you know, come seventh and looking forward to new season. I think we had Fozzie, obviously, Nicky Forster and Glenn Murray up top, you know, two really good players. I thought we had a chance if we keep the squad together and add a few. He left, and then obviously I spoke to Mickey and just said I felt, for me, Dean asked me to do something, and I agreed with Dean. I just didn't think it was right to stay there. So I didn't want to leave the club because, it's my club. But at the same time, I just felt that, you know, it wasn't for me to stay. Obviously, Mickey Adams, I wouldn't have been his man. I know Mickey, but I was Dino's man. I think it'd been really difficult. So I left the club.
And sure. and you went off, did a few jobs in non-league, most recently with Burgess Hill.
Yeah, well, I had about 3 years off after that. I'd come out of football and had about 3 years away from it. And then someone asked me about Burgess Hill, and I went up there for, ended up there for 6 seasons. And, you know, we got one promotion that time, which was good. And had some really good cup runs and really enjoyed it. But I stopped there about 3 years ago now. And had a few offers to go back into it, but I've done it for a long time now, and I've decided that I've had enough of it. It takes a lot of your time, more time than people think. You've got youth team, you've got reserves, you know. So I was up there sort of 5 times a week, which is fine, but it wasn't a full time job.
So what are you doing now with yourself these days?
I work at a private school. Work at Lancing College. I've been there for years, and I also do a start up a about 2 years ago, a local fella to me asked me to help him set up a girls football club in Woodendine Wildcats. And we started out 2 years ago, and we have about between 50 and 70 kids come, girls come down on Saturday morning. It's fantastic. It's really, it gives me a football fix. They come down between, I say, a couple of hours in the morning on Saturday. So I'm finished by sort of 10:30, which is, I mean, it's great.
Well, women's football is the fastest growing team game, certainly in this country and probably the world at the moment. And it's getting more and more headlines and more and more column inches. It's amazing.
Well, we've got the Euros coming up. The draw has just been made. We've got Brighton. We've got England against Norway, and we could have England against Spain or England against Germany, all at the Amex. I mean, you know, that's going to help you. I mean, when this happens next July, Chappers, this is going to help you. It's going to kick on to something possibly stratospheric. Are you ready for this?
Yeah. I mean, be fair, even from the little club we had that started, you know, 2 years ago, and then I think first session about 10, 15 people turned up, 10 girls turned up. Now we're getting 50 to 70. And out of that, we've made sort of, I think there's about four sides been made up and parents take them, manage them, or what have you. It's just so refreshing, you know, with the girls. It's technically really good, some of them, that, you know, where they play a lot more now. And it's been quite an eye-opener how good some of them are. I've got my eldest daughter, she's played. She's 27 now, she still plays. And she would have loved saying this back when she was playing, but there wasn't that many teams. She's played with a boys' team up until a certain age. But I say, you know, the football now, even when you watch it on TV, the girls' football has advanced so much, like tactically and everything about it, you know, it's moved on massively from what it was.
So in your old club, which is a very different place from where you left it, obviously back in the Premier League, doing really well, currently sitting in fifth. Disappointing result against Man City last weekend, but a very decent performance in the second half. So, I mean, where are you at with the club right now, and what are you thinking of where we are?
Oh, it's incredible what the club's done. To think where the club was and where the chairman's taken them, you couldn't dream of what they're doing as a football club. I've been to a few games. I went to the Man City game the other day, and like you say, first half very difficult, second half played really well. But you know, you just got to look for the quality for the club is just unbelievable, and it is without doubt the best the club's ever been. Even back in the late 70s, when the club was in a decent place, I feel the club now is, you know, marched on to better things. And it's quite a strange one, because when Chris was here, Chris out, and I thought he did a great job, and I was a bit disappointed to see him go start with, because I thought, you know, a bit harsh, what have you. But with what the club's done, totally right decision, the football they're playing. The new manager's come in, he's doing an unbelievable job. Obviously knows what he's doing, and you know, we're now playing sides, you know, and giving them real good games.
Yeah, and then obviously from a coaching point of view, when you look at what you used to do when you were taking the kids, and you're actually seeing that there is this pathway now, that must make you incredibly happy.
Yeah, you know, right for the club. I mean, you know, the players that the club have got there now, you know, obviously the main one there, Dunkey, it's great, he's come through the club. You know, he'd probably go down as the Brighton's greatest ever player, which is totally right, you know, what he's doing for the football club. You know, I just think it's incredible. Solly March as well, you know, has come in, done unbelievably. But right through, you know, I just think the identity of the club, it's so difficult to maintain yourself in the Premier League. Yeah. It's an unforgiving league. But what the club have done so far, you know, obviously they had a little bit of doubt at one time, we weren't scoring goals, but that, you know, hopefully that's changed now. Obviously, Liverpool Saturday is going to be a real difficult one, but I just think the club's moved on massively.
Do you remember playing with Solly's dad?
He was a year below me as an apprentice. His dad was Stephen.
Solly March's dad is younger than us.
Yeah, I think he was a year below me. I think he was. Yeah,
because we're in the same school year. Oh my god.
Yeah, I think he was a year below. Yeah.
Right. Let me sign off. Let's sign off with this. It's been a real pleasure having you on, Chappers. Let me sign off with this one question to you. If you were still playing now, and you were a player at the Albion, where would you fit into Graham Potter's plans in the scheme of what it is he'd want from you on the pitch? Where would you be?
What numbers are subs nowadays?
Depends what competition. I think it's up to nine in some of them.
And I'll be happy with that as well.
But you must be, you'd dream of playing in a team that Graham Potter would be coaching, wouldn't you?
Oh, the way he plays, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Yeah, I mean, it'd be such a, just looking at it, I would know. I mean, it's such a different, they're such a good side, they're so many good positions. Maybe middle of the park, maybe just sitting in front of the back three would do me.
Yeah. Okay, just spraying the passes around,
just spraying it around.
Yeah,
I could see you doing a Liam Brooke kind of style. Okay, and that's a good place to leave it because that is all we've got time for this week. So thank you, of course, to Alan Wares. Thank you so much for joining us, Ian Chapman. I've been Eddie Packham. This has been the Albion Roar. Liverpool this weekend. Let's hope we can bring those 3 points back to Sussex, just like last year. See you next week.
Get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove. You get a fast car. I got a plan to get us out of here. Been working at the convenience store. Managed to save just a little bit of money. Won't have to drive too far. Just cross the border and into the city. You and I can both get jobs. Finally see what it means to be living. See, my old man's got a problem. Yeah, but the bottle, that's the way it is. He says, body's too old for working. His body's too young to look like his. My mama went off and left him. She wanted more from life than he could give. I said, somebody's got to take care of him. So I quit school and that's what I did. You got a fast car. Is it fast enough so we can fly away? We gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way. So I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. Speed so fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice, wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. Someone. You got a fast car. We go cruise and entertain ourselves. Still ain't got a job. Now work in the market as a checkout girl. I know things will get better. You'll find work and I'll get promoted. We'll move out of the shelter. Buy a bigger house and live in the suburbs. I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. Speed so fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice, wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. I got a job that pays all our bills. Instead of drinking late at the bar, see more your friends than you do your kids. I'd always hope for better. Thought maybe together you and me find it. I got no plans, I ain't going nowhere. So take your fast car and keep on driving. So I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. So fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us. Your arm felt nice, wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone.
got a fast car? Is it fast enough so you can fly away? You gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way.